This is the Doc Talk Podcast presented by Betfred Sports 2024, Episode 5. Dr. Rob Zadiska sporting the Big 8 conference shirt, man.
Rocking it old school, baby.
Rocking it old school. What are you drinking there, buddy?
I got from our guy Craig in Georgia. So this is it's a collab here. It's Dark Alliance. It's a big old salted chocolate peanut butter stout.
Damn.
Basically, it almost tastes more like a toffee stout than a...
Craig was getting a little pissed at us because we weren't drinking all his beer, and he had so much beer here that we had to, like, drink it in moderation.
Craig doesn't send us... It's not like he's sending us Coors Light.
No.
The stuff he sends us, it's all really good beer.
Yeah.
Everything packs a punch.
Yes. I'm drinking something from Pontoon Brewing called PB&J, and it's a peanut butter jelly. It's almost a sour. This is good. This is really, really good.
Yeah, so this is, like I said, it's a big old stout, but it's out of what, from Wild Leap?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a good beer. It's a badass looking can. I mean, it's not like often you look at a beer can and go, that's a badass looking can. I'm going to drink that beer.
Hey, if you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel yet, just hit the subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening on Podbean, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you're listening to the podcast, you can go find our YouTube channel on YouTube. Just search Doc Talk Sports. You'll be able to find it. Hit the subscribe button, and you can actually watch this podcast. And if you do listen, make sure to hit the subscribe button on iTunes and Podbean and all those cool places because, you know, we like putting out content. We do want to thank
content. Owen loves it when we refer to it as content.
Owen, you're dragging a little bit today. What concert did you see last
night? I'm not dragging.
He's mellow.
I did see a concert last night, Sierra Farrell at the Admiral. So
You go to these, and you've brought me into the independent music scene, but you go see people I've never heard of, and that place was like sold out last night, right?
Yeah, it's not independent music, it's a touring person.
I know, but I all these people I go see, and
it's not Taylor Swift.
It's not Taylor Swift, but...
I'm perfectly good with Taylor Swift.
Packs a pretty good punch. I mean, you're selling out the Admiral. That's what, 2,500, 3,000 people?
No, it's only like 1,200 maybe.
And that's the old Sokol Auditorium, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know, the Admiral. If you say Sokol, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the old.
It's the Admiral
it's
now?
It's the Admiral now. They,
it's still the Sokol.
So I'm kind of with you on that. I'm surprised they changed the name. But
it's like it's not X, it's still Twitter.
The folks who own the Waiting Room, the Slowdown, the Reverb, they bought Sokol and then they redid it, put a lot of money into it.
Sounds like it's like a trust. They're like taking over everything.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people touring right now. Owen needs to get on tour. Sorry, I don't mean to apply the pressure, son.
I think they need a van to do that, though.
They have a van.
Is it fixed?
It's fixed now.
Don't get us started on the van.
You are wearing the Big 8 Conference shirt and you're wearing green. Why are you wearing green?
Because we got a guest today.
We do have a guest today.
We have
today.
Another guest, and it's a great color.
And green is close to his heart because we're bringing in former Benson Bunny and Super Bowl champ and your teammate, Tony Veland, joins us in the basement. Welcome to the basement.
I appreciate it, brother. It's good to see you both.
Absolutely.
Here's a thing, though, that is kind of throwing me off.
Okay.
We got this huge guy, big lineman, you know, manly man guy. And both of you guys are sitting here talking about drinking beers. One is salted caramel chocolate. The other one is Peter Van Jamley beer.
Here's the deal.
What the
hell? It's breakfast beer. It's breakfast beer.
Here's the deal. We had Brendan Stye here last time, and I just kind of teased it a little bit with a photo. And Brendan can't drink beer because he's got the diverticulitis, right?
Yeah, he can't have high amounts of yeast in his gut.
Yeah. So, but we put the picture out because everybody knows that we drink during this thing. And they called out my manhood and Rob's manhood for all the seltzers.
Yeah, because he can drink seltzers because if it's a vodka seltzer, there's no yeast in it.
Yeah, gotcha.
So he can drink those. So he's drinking Topo Chico, and everybody, dude, we got hammered.
I know.
On that one.
It's because you make fun of seltzers. But
as well I should.
But when you can't drink anything else, you have no choice.
It's what you've got.
That is true.
Do you have an alcohol choice?
Oh, I really don't. I mean, as of late, I've done a lot of whiskey.
Yeah. Bourbon or rye or
bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You a neat guy, rocks.
Rocks most of the
time.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I like it on the rocks.
I just haven't come around to that.
Really?
Yet. Yeah.
My wife says I get mean. She goes, yeah. She goes, I don't like you drinking hard alcohol. I don't think I get mean. Do I look like a mean person?
You don't get mean. Here's the
something a mean person would say.
I was gonna say, here's the problem with Travis, and it's not so much. I shouldn't say it's a problem. You're just one of these guys that there is no emotional based opinion filter.
True.
Like you don't care,
but
if you've got
sober.
An opinion. I know. Well, let's disinhibit that even more with hard alcohol.
So I've been trying to line Tony up for about a month and a half now, and we've played, you know, tag.
Dude's a busy man.
He is a busy man. We tried to get him in last week, and you were down in Missouri for a 7-on-7 tournament because you are coaching for the Warren Academy.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I was thinking about you because I forgot you were in Missouri. And we've talked about this before we went on the air. Rob, I don't know if you saw it, but Cam Newton was at a 7-on-7 tournament in Atlanta.
I saw the video.
Yeah. So are emotions that high at 7-on-7 tournaments?
They are. Every week, every time we go to a tournament, it's always the way. Because number one, obviously, the kids want to have fun. You know, the kids want to be, you know, have swag, you know, do flips and all this type of stuff every time they score. But then they're jawing. You know, they're jawing. And then next thing you know, the coaches are jawing, and refs aren't making calls they aren't supposed to make. So coaches and refs are going at it, and then parents are getting involved. And sometimes it goes a little farther than it should. Now, the whole Cam Newton thing, like, for somebody to take that level with him, something a little delusional. This guy's, what, 6'6", like 250 pounds?
He was tossing him. Three, four guys come after him. He's tossing him.
Right.
That's a big human being.
Yeah, because I feel like when it's all said and done, I'm like, hey, let's just hug it out. Let's not do it.
He's too big. You've been there. It's NFL football players are not small people.
No.
I don't care what position you play.
Right.
You're a defensive back.
Right.
You're not a small person.
That's true.
You are not an unathletic person.
Well, on the other side is if we're used to aggression. We're used to, you know, having to be violent during this game.
But you don't. You can take a hit and return it.
Yeah, and most of us have been away from the game for a while, so if I can hit somebody, I kind of want to do that. So don't test me.
There is some pent-upness there. So let's do, I'm curious about the 7-on-7 thing, I've always thought it's one of these things that's a good thing for the sport in the sense that football is one of the few sports that for years did not have a year-round component to it. I mean, I'm also one of these guys that I like seeing kids going out and playing other sports. Mm-hmm. I love the multi-sport athlete concept. Yeah. But at the same time, if there's a sport and it's kind of like, quote-unquote, your sport, you want to do a little something more than just during that season.
Right.
And all of a sudden, now there's this avenue for it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing. I see some high school coaches who don't like it.
Okay, but so explain it to me, because I don't understand the 7-on-7 thing. Because it wasn't around when I was going up through high school football. So take me through the rules. I mean, what is it, besides being 7-on-7?
I mean, it's basically going to be, it's pretty much football without the line.
Okay.
So most of these tournaments you can't run. It's all passing based. You have basically three downs to get a first down. First down is 15 yards. You got two options to get first downs. I think the field is like 40 yards or something like that. Scoring is the same, you know, for the most part. Some of these tournaments have different scoring patterns where if you're on defense and you stop the person, you get 2 points. If you get an interception, you get 3 points. You can still run him back for a touchdown, those types of things. But in essence, it gives a kid a chance to really learn the passing game. You know, so you don't benefit from obviously not having, you know, a real look and not having to read linemen and play action and kind of all those types of things. But from a passing league standpoint, like, it's a great thing. Like, for me, the biggest thing is, take a kid like me, born here in Benson, not a lot of chance to get out of the state, out of the city or anything like that. You got some of these kids that get a chance to go to, you know, Texas and California and Florida to play against some of these kids that they've never been able to play against out of state talent. Then the other side is that you're getting exposure from some of these coaches. Like, we take these kids down to Manhattan, Kansas. They get a chance to actually go down to a college visit, you know, run down out of K-State's tunnel and do the whole uniform and pictures and kind of all that stuff. So not only are you playing against different talent, not only are you getting seen by different coaches, you're getting experiences. And honestly, the exposure is getting some of these kids scholarships. That's just real.
You know, because you're coaching for the Warren Academy.
Yeah.
How many different teams do you guys have?
We have 18U, 14, 15U. We have 12U. But we have a lot of teams. We have, I'm going to guesstimate, we've got probably about 120 to 140-ish kids.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a lot. It is a lot. And luckily for Steve, you know, he's built up enough of a relationship with within the city to the Millard Athletic Association, Elkhorn Athletic Association, those type of, we've been around long enough that we've got credibility now. And you've got coaches that have been around, that have done XYZ, right? So we're in a great scenario to be able to help these kids get to the next level.
So you bring up Millard, you bring up Elkhorn. Mm-hmm. You went to Benson.
Right.
How is it accessible to kids who can't afford it?
That's the hard part. Yeah, that is. It is. It is. Now, mind you, we do have some scholarships that will, you know, allow for individuals, but it's just a situation where we can't do this for free anymore. We've been doing it for a long time. It takes resources to get some of these things happening, and we don't have the luxury of getting sponsorships from organizations to be able to do that. So that's kind of where we, you know, have a little bit of a black eye, if you want to call it that. But we definitely have kids from OPS. We have kids from all over, just to be completely honest with you. And it creates a great scenario for them to be able to play from, you know, Benson to, you know, Westside to Papillion to Gretna. We've got Lewis Central. We got all these kids that are able to come together, play with each other. They all respect each other, but they get a chance to play on a different level, represent the state, and actually have a good time.
Which I think getting out of state is probably – that's got to be a huge of it. Because, I think about – so when I was in high school, I mean, you didn't compete against anybody from outside the state of Nebraska. And now I'm looking at periodically, I know like basketball is one of the big ones where you see a lot of out-of-state matchups. My son went to high school at Westside. They played St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the big Kansas City schools. This was in 2020, but everybody had some COVID shutdown going on. And right. So that opened up the door for more of these out-of-state matchups. Right. But being able to, okay, here's a bunch of big old kids coming out of Kansas City, the team's half loaded with Missouri, Kansas, and right. K-State recruits. Let's see how our guys match up against right. those guys, and it gives both teams an opportunity to see how well they can match up. Right. I mean, the other thing I think about is like wrestling, being able to go to national tournaments in different states. The exposure with that is huge in terms of figuring out weak spots that you've got to shore up in terms of matching up to be able to go play at that next level, because you go play a college sport anywhere. I don't care if it's NAIA. I don't care if it's Power Five. There's California kids. There's Texas right, kids. Right. There's Las Vegas kids. There's, you got the DC kids from the East Coast.
Right.
It's this mix of kids, no matter what the sport is. And being able to test yourself against those other kids, I think, has got to be just a massive benefit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it gives you a chance to really figure out, like, do I measure up? Like, I know my coach says this. You know, my mom and dad says this. Like, do I really have that talent? Now I'm going against, you know, guys from California and from Texas. And those, you know, they play sports all year round, you know. So if I measure up there, okay, now that sets me up to build my confidence, and that's probably going to help me moving forward. So those types of things are the things that we're looking for. But the other side of it, just purely from an experience standpoint, you know, again, when I was a kid, the only time I played out-of-state talent was when I went down to Lincoln's camp and they had people coming in, you know. So I never went out of the state, you know what I mean? So it was something different. So now we've got some of these kids that even if they don't play college football, they get a chance to go out of state and experience something that is, you know, completely different. Like, we took kids to Vegas last year, which they had an amazing time. You know, we got a chance to somewhat walk the strip and see what that's about. You go down in Houston,
you just tell them not to take the postcards. Don't take the postcards.
Stay in your group. Don't wander off. Stranger danger, right? You know. but it is a great experience, and to me, it's just a lot of benefits. Now, don't get me wrong. There's the other side of it, right? You know, the whole select sport type of thing where You know, you're doing everything for one sport. You're betting all your, putting all your eggs in one basket for that particular sport. I don't like that either. I've always been, do as many sports as you can possibly do. But we actually recommend that as well. So we got people that do 707, but some of those guys have to do all for basketball or for track or baseball and those type of things. And we encourage that. Go do some of that stuff.
Well, what I like about that is, and I'm going to follow this up with volleyball, because I know for a fact that there are volleyball players who don't play high school basketball because the club volleyball season runs at the same time. Mm-hmm. And volleyball coaches don't even recruit high school. They don't even step foot in a high school. They go to AAU. And then you got club coaches who say, hey, I don't want you to play basketball. And if they do, well, you can, but you can't miss practice for club. I don't like that.
Right.
And I was going to ask you, you know, we had Bruce Chubbuck in here a couple weeks ago. And Bruce is the head coach at Omaha Central for basketball. And we brought up how college coaches don't even come to high schools anymore to see how kids do in the classroom, get to right. ask a coach. Do you find more college coaches recruiting the 7-on-7 tournaments, or they still go to high school games?
No, they're still going to high school games, because you've got to be able to, you know, the passing league stuff is only one element of it, right? Like, you've got to have the physicality of it. You've got to be able to see what happens, you know, downhill, smash mouth, like how they're going to react towards it, because this is not physical, right? I mean, this is all finesse stuff, yeah. So you've got to see the other side of it as well. But one side of it is, again, you're going up against great talent in other places. What are you going to do? Are you going to step up? You know, who's going to step up on this particular team? If you're highly touted, are you going to be able to do that same thing against those guys who are highly touted from other places? So there's still a ton of coaches that actually come out and see some of this stuff. And everything's put on social media too, right? So you're you know, growing your brand. You know, you're getting that stuff out there for everybody to see. So it's a huge benefit.
You know, you mentioned the multi-sport. You're a Benson Bunny. You played football at Benson. You played basketball at Benson. Right. You ran track and field at Benson. What was your – what do you think your best sport was? Was it football?
Yeah, my best sport was okay. football. My favorite sport, honestly, was basketball.
Really?
I think
well, you had some pretty damn good teams there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we did. I loved basketball, and to be honest with you, I felt like if I was probably maybe 6'4"-ish, you know, someone that I probably could have played. I mean, offensively, I wasn't great, but I thought defensively, I was decent. So I probably wouldn't have an opportunity. But, hey, I made the best choice for me. Like, there's going down to Nebraska and being in that situation was – I couldn't have dreamed that.
So you go to Nebraska and you're a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And you got this guy blocking for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this because I came in 94. So your senior year, Rob, is when I showed up at Fox 42. And I was just doing a little research because I wasn't here during that time. You went as a quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and you were the number one quarterback.
I was almost that guy.
Yes.
I was almost that guy. Going into my second year, it was between me, Mike, and Tommy. And me and Mike were kind of co-number ones, but it came down to the last play of the last scrimmage before our first game, and I broke my collarbone. And when I broke my collarbone, basically Mike took over, and then I think it was
God. I forgot about
because Mike
that.
Got hurt in spring ball, yeah. right?
No. We all kind of battled.
Yeah, he had a pretty bad knee injury.
Yeah.
Got his freshman sophomore year, which kind of haunted him for the rest of his career a little bit, maybe.
Right.
Do you ever think back, sit back, and go, "Oh crap, what if?"
You know, sometimes, every once in a while I do, but at the same time, no, because, again, if I were to play quarterback, there was no way I would have to make it to the NFL. If I were to play quarterback, like, who knows what happened with this whole, you know, Tommy Frazier thing? Who knows if any of these championships? Who knows? I couldn't have written the script better than it happened. You know, we played for 3 national championships, winning 2. You know, I remember being 3 years old watching NFL, but never think I'd ever have a chance to play, right? And so when everything played out, it played out better than it ever could. And I have a lot of respect, obviously, for Tommy. Tommy's literally, in my opinion, the best college athlete that I've played with. You know, like he just had that kind of effect on the game, you know, not just straight athletically, from the mental standpoint as well.
And let's not forget, Brooks there at the same time,
right? Yeah, Brooks there too, yeah.
You know, did Cluster go as a quarterback?
Cluster did as well. Yeah. Yeah. So we all came in. Well, Tommy was second year, but me, Brooke, and Cluster all came in the same year. So you talk about battling. You know what I mean? I mean, it was tough.
I mean, the crazy thing is you would never get that in today's college ball, right?
Right.
That many quarterbacks
right.
going
no.
to committing
no.
to one team.
No. No. because the grass is greener somewhere. I'm going to find where I can go.
Yeah, although at the time, though, I don't know, from an in-state standpoint, because I grew up in Lincoln. I mean, I grew up in Nebraska, and everybody kind of knew everybody. At least in-state, you kind of knew everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember, so I was a freshman in Lincoln when you guys were seniors in high school. Mm-hmm. It was 95 your senior year? 95. Yeah, so you guys were 1 year behind me. Yeah. I remember watching you guys in high school, and when you guys came to Lincoln, it was like, ah, thank God we got it. It's you're always looking at that as a player. You're looking at the, all right, we got to make sure we got the next great quarterback. Who are going to be the next great defensive guys we got? Who's the next great running back? We got to get those guys down here.
Right.
And it's one of those, you're sitting there going like, all right, we got the next couple of quarterbacks right there.
Well, I think the interesting thing with that is, I know Brooke was somewhat highly touted. I wasn't highly touted as a quarterback. I was just more of an athlete. You know, when Tommy came in, obviously he was highly touted. But I think the thing that kind of made us good was that we all came in like knowing that we weren't necessarily the guy, but we had to work to make that happen, right? And we were going to do that regardless, you know. And so, you know, me and Brooke and Cluster battled, and then Cluster ended up changing wide receiver. So Tommy steps in, and we all battle, and then, you know, things happen, and you know, we all end up playing our role where we're supposed to play. So I end up going to safety. Cluster goes to wide receiver, still has a huge contribution. Brooke is the backup, but still huge contribution. Tommy comes in, still huge contribution. So I just loved being a part of that scenario where everybody wasn't like, okay, I'm done. It's not working out for me. I got to go find something else. Like, that's BS. Like, I feel like that's the problem with today's football. You just don't have that commitment anymore, right? So, yeah. So
although there's a little bit of it. I mean, I'm not trying to overly pump you up, but it's,
it's okay. You can boost his ego, you know. It's okay.
It's just, there's a little bit of a testament here. I think you got to give yourself a little credit for the fact that not everybody can make those position change switches.
True.
I mean, I've seen on, I mean, it's the majority of the time you come out of high school, here's the position you've played. 97% of the time, that's the position you play in college. That's now, true. The time that I see a little bit of a variation there, it's usually more of a like an offensive tackle moving to offensive guard,
yeah,
or a center moving to guard, or a guard moving to center. That's the change you see. You don't necessarily see that going from offense to defense. And when you do see it, I generally find that to be rather impressive when you see guys who are so athletic that they're able to make that change. And because we're talking about quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Usually quarterbacks don't like to get hit or do the hitting. No,
there's an alternate universe where Tony Veland is a 3-year starting quarterback for the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That is true.
Instead, you're a starting safety and an NFL defensive back.
Right. So who makes that? You break your collarbone. Tommy goes to have the year that he did.
Yeah.
Who comes in? Is it Dr. Tom that comes in? Is it George Darlington? Who comes in and says, we need to talk?
Yeah. What was that process like?
It was me.
Really?
Yeah. It was me, because you remember after I broke my collarbone, I came back and I was still playing quarterback. So the next year, me and Brooke were co-number two.
So this
Tommy
would have
was
been
number one. So that was in 92-3.
Okay.
I think 93. Yeah, because I was hurt that year. When I came back that year, that's when I tore my patellar tendon. So when I tore my patellar tendon after that game, I'm like, this is just crazy. Like, maybe if I hit people, I won't get hurt. You know what I'm saying? So I was, and I just thought in my mind, I'm like, and it wasn't a situation where I was like, you know, I didn't think I could get back into rotation. I'm like, I felt like I could do that, but
there was a lot to overcome.
Well, there was, right. There was. And unfortunately, that was kind of my MO. But the other side of it was, like, they wanted me to play defensive back when I first got here. And I was just like, I just want to be on the field, you know. And if I can do something a little bit different and kind of take advantage of that scenario, like, I might as well do it. And so, and going through that injury, like, that was, like, it was tough. Like, I went through some tough times with that, a little bit of soul searching. But again, I just wanted to play. I just wanted to prove that I was good enough to be on that field, regardless of whether it was quarterback, receiver, safety, whatever the case may be. Because remember, at Benson, and I don't see that you see as much of that anymore, but at Benson, we had probably about 7 or 8 guys we stayed on the field every play with a session of maybe two or three. So I'm used to doing different stuff. I was used to being a corner and a safety and a quarterback and special teams and all that stuff. So it wasn't that big of a change for me to go up there and do something different because I'd done it.
So who'd you approach? Did you approach Coach Osborne?
I approached Coach Osborne. Yeah, and I just told him, like, you know, Coach, I love being this, but I think I'm going to make – I think because of all these injuries – I think I'm going to try to make a change and try to go to the defensive side.
What was his reaction? Obviously, he said yes, but did he try to talk you out of it?
Well, not really. He was just like, you know, Coach, you know, he was like, Tony, well, you know, we've loved having you here, and I definitely understand with all of the things that you've gone through that, you know, maybe a different route is what you want to take. So let's go down here and talk to Coach Darlington and see what he wants to do. And, you know, Coach was like, yeah, come on in. we'll take it. I was like, okay, well, let's do this.
Was there much of a learning curve, or did it come pretty natural just based on your football pedigree and your natural athletic ability?
So it took a minute to get fluid backpedaling and braking and kind of all that stuff. I mean, you get away from that, it takes a while. But as far as, like, understanding the defense, like, that was a piece of cake, you know, other than the fact that Coach Darlington had, like, 85 defenses. That was – probably the old issue, but yeah, that part was easy.
Coach Darlington at practice, run it again,
right?
Run it again. Right. I was a scout team O lineman for a year. I got to
hear it all the time.
Got to listen to Coach Darlington, run it again.
Yeah,
and I think there was a lot of stuff to learn on that defense.
What do you remember, Tony, about Tony as a quarterback? Much?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about how you were right in the running there, and I remember that. And I mean, it was a little bit of an uncertain time period because you're coming off that 1990 season. So that was the year Mickey Joseph was the starting mm-hmm. quarterback.
Is that the year they lost to Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Oh, that was bad.
But bad injury. I mean, that was in an era where if you lost a game 45-21 – That was like an all-timer. Like, right. There was no greater defeat than that in right. Nebraska history. And now now Melvin Gordon's still running.
So is Marv Seiler.
Fuck you. Anyway. Sorry, Tony.
It's the only thing I got, man. I put that Iowa State logo just to piss him off so he has to look at it all the time.
Dude, my dad grew up 20 minutes from Ames. I had so many buddies that played for the Cyclones. A lot of Nebraska kids went there. That was the only reason.
Did you get recruited anywhere else besides Nebraska?
Yeah, I narrowed it down, honestly, between Iowa State and Nebraska, because I was going into engineering. And
yep.
So they recruited me pretty hard, and one of my best friends, a guy named Mike Horacek, ended up going there and one of their stars and this and that. So, you know, I was this close to going, but I – just got to thinking, like I know I'm going to have a great degree, but do I want to lose for the next 4 years?
It's different now.
It
Matt
is.
Campbell's doing a great job.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to Iowa State for grad school.
I'll be a hell of an engineer, exactly. But I'm going to lose.
Exactly. So those two, Colorado, I wanted to go to Stanford. I got a little bit of interest there, and then it kind of waned. But, I mean, I got letters from everywhere, but the real – those colleges that were really interested were probably those four.
So who's the smarter one? I mean, I know you're.
It's not even close. Dude, this guy QB, over here with the brain, like, come
dude,
on now.
QB defensive back. I think.
No, I'm talking engineer doctor.
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, you're talking about professional.
Yeah.
No.
Engineer's pretty.
Man, I
got
to tell you what. All the so there we had a run there, and this was like 89, 90, 91. I don't know what it is about the center of the line. But we went three deep at center and nose guard with engineering majors.
Really?
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing.
Did you specialize in it? Like, were you civil engineer, electrical engineer, mechanical?
No, I started out towards mechanical, but then I got 3 years in. I'm like, I don't really want to do this.
I don't want to design mechanical systems the rest of my life.
Like, this is not my thing. So I ended up making a little bit of a detour. So I have an interdisciplinary degree, and it's in basic engineering, basic business. And so I just went that route. What I will tell you, though, the thing that's kind of tough is obviously football takes a lot of time, right? And it's a little bit easier when you're with everybody.
A little bit.
And you're with everybody, and you can use kind of some of the tame tutors and that type of stuff. There was none of that. Like, I'm going over to the college, and I barely saw probably maybe two football players, maybe anybody that I knew. And then we always had to recruit some weird, you know, tutor that could barely speak English. So it was always a little tough, you know, it was always a little tough. But having some of these guys and knowing that we've, you know, had that record of, you know, academic excellence, all Big Eight, you know, academic excellence forever, like, you know, that was pretty fulfilling.
You know, Rob always says the 95 team was the 94 backups. You were on both.
I was.
Which one?
I was. That's okay.
Is he right? If 95 played 94, who wins?
I'm going 95. I'm sorry. Here's why I say that. So, 94, we finally got over the hump. But 95, I think we were so confident that we were almost arrogant. You know what I'm saying? With 94, we were still trying to prove something. In 95, it was like, step up if you want to type situation. And I think most of these guys having that experience, having a whole nother year of having to deal with that, and now you're the guy and you're bringing other guys along. I just think that confidence level like took us to a whole nother level. Because 94, like we made it, but it was still one of those like, are we 100% sure until that last game? You know, type situation. Yeah. So,
I will say in regards to the 95 team, the story I always go back to is my wife and I go down to Phoenix for the bowl game. Our season's wrapped up with the Giants. We weren't that good. Anyway, so we go down to Phoenix. We're going to go to the bowl game. We're hanging out. I talked to my brother John's on the 95 team. Give him a call. He's like, yeah, come on over. We'll hang out at the hotel. You can BS with everybody on the line. We'll just kind of chill because we got the afternoon off. So this was probably, I don't know what, 3, 4, 5 days before the game. So we go down there and we're hanging out with, I think it was like John and maybe Matt Hoskinson and Carpenter. And I asked him, I was like, guys, just pure curiosity from my standpoint. Like, this is the first time in 5 years I'm on the outside looking in. How do you guys think you're going to do? Like, what is your guys' thought on how the game's going to go? And I remember my brother looking at me and he goes, if you like to bet, he goes, go put money on Nebraska right now. He goes, it's not going to be close. And I'm like, but that's kind of bold. I mean, you're literally days out from a national title game against an opponent where most everybody's picking Florida.
Right.
And I'm sitting here going, wait, really? And he's like, yeah. He goes, it's not going to be close. He goes, we're going to destroy them.
Yeah.
And I remember Hoskinson and Carpenter are sitting there, and they're both nodding their heads. They're like, yeah, it's not even going to be close at all. He goes, those guys are so screwed. And I remember thinking just, damn, because I remember looking at that Miami game the year before, and we're sitting here going like, okay, that Ray Lewis guy, yeah, he's pretty solid. That guy can fly. And, I mean, God, dude, Sapp is Sapp. And, I mean, both those defensive ends are going to be – those are both NFL defensive ends. Yeah. I mean, that's a good team. And you got a couple of NFL guys on the O-line. Frank Costa, I still think he's a little underrated.
Because you left his body parts on the Orange Bowl floor.
Right.
I mean, God. Hey, you were part of that. Right. I mean,
I still feel bad because I trade messages with Costa every so often on social media. He's a great dude.
That's cool.
But he got just destroyed in that game.
He did.
You guys just... Oh my God, it was brutal.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're before the Miami game, we're sitting there looking at that going like, this is a hell of a Miami team. This is old school late 80s, early 90s Miami all over again, and we're playing in their backyard.
Right.
This is going to be a tough one. And then you go down and you've got Florida, and again, everybody's picking Florida. SEC team on grass, night game, it's going to be hot. And I'm sitting here listening to John and Hosk and Tim and these guys who are just like, dude, it's not even going to be close.
Did Did you know that going in?
No, I didn't know that. I mean, we all felt confident. I don't think we thought we were going to win like that, you know, to be completely honest with you. But
the old line did. I'm just telling you that.
Which is cool. Because
I remember actually, so Eric Anderson and like Fred Pollock and those guys were there too. And I remember Eric was the starting right tackle on that team. Taylor was the starting left guard, and Taylor was there too. And I remember both those guys were like, "Yeah, we're going to destroy these guys."
Well, but see, that's where the glaring difference was, right? Like, we were definitely more smash mouth, tougher, stronger on the line. You know, when you go to skill position, like, we were pretty balanced, right? They had really good receivers. We had, you know, some decent, you know, DBs and linebackers and that type of thing. So, you know, that was really kind of difference. But also, when you kind of come back to this, you know, 94, 95 thing, I also think, well, you got the addition of Terrell Farley. You've got, you know, Winstrom and Tomich, and these guys getting another year of experience. You got Tommy, another year of experience.
Amon was on it.
Amon, you know, so again, not to take anything away from 94 by any means, because we don't get to 95 unless we have the 94 team, right? But I just think that, you know, that extra year experience of some of these younger guys coming up, like, it was unreal. But yeah, to that Florida game, I say this a number of times, like, we destroyed them, but I think, in my opinion, not to take anything away from us, but one of the reasons we're a lot more successful is because they went away from the run. They went away completely away from the run. They made it easy for us. Like, oh, no running? Okay, Terrell, go get him. Winston, go get him. You know? I mean, that was easy. I'm like, thank you. Appreciate it. So, but yeah, that game was crazy. I didn't think it would be over like that quickly. I mean, to be honest with you, like, the second half was almost boring. But it was a great experience.
As a fan watching, because I grew up, again, said it already, grew up in Lincoln. I was a huge Nebraska fan growing up. Again, I'm on the outside now looking in, and you're watching that as a fan. That was a fun second half. Like, you just wanted to see.
Destroy them. Destroy them.
Bury these guys. Yeah,
it was more you wanted to destroy Spurrier, right? I mean, at the end of the day.
To be honest with you, yes.
I mean, he was, yeah.
Look at him trying to be politically correct now.
him and Lee Corso and some of these other guys, I'm like.
The fact that the media jumped on the Florida bandwagon was annoying as all hell.
Well, that too. And then, like, the most ridiculous thing. Well, we're playing on grass, so there's an advantage to, like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, people don't get hit on turf, or they don't score on turf. Like, there's no difference.
Is there really a difference between turf and grass besides the injury
that gives somebody the advantage?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I mean,
that.
The only thing, I don't see that. The only thing I could maybe see is if you play on one surface, if you got one team that has played 10 out of 12 games on grass and the other team's played 10 out of 12 games on turf, how you step and how you move might be a little different. Although, God, I don't think so.
I just don't feel. I mean, unless we're in like a wet field type.
Yeah,
I think that's the only thing that changes.
If it's a bad turf,
like the orange bowl. You guys remember showing up in '94 and that
sand,
thing was painted?
Yeah, right.
That
it was sand.
I'll never forget showing up for media day. I'm like, they fucking painted this field.
Yeah,
and they had Remember they had a halftime show where they had camels and a bunch of stuff.
Osborne's still pissed about the fucking elephants.
I'll never forget. Like, you're gonna. It looked good on TV, but if you walked by
it was painted sand.
It was bad.
It was like a sandbox with a ring of grass around the outside.
That's funny.
Elephants. That's hilarious. I had somebody tell me that you guys won because elephants are lucky. I'm like, okay, sure.
That's Alabama's secret right there.
How was your, and Rob talks about it a lot on this podcast, and Brendan Stye actually brought it up the last time on the last podcast. You go from Omaha Benson to Nebraska. How was that transition? And where I'm going here is Brendan brought it up was the maybe natural segregation that took place. And he talked about how, you know, in training room or training table, black athletes would end up on one side, white athletes would end up on one. Did you feel that, and how did it get better? You guys were there for that, and did it exist in your mind?
It existed in reality. in my mind, I didn't really think about it because I didn't look at it that way. Because I always just like, okay, whatever group I'm with, like that's who I'm rolling with. So if it's the DBs, if the quarterbacks, that's who I'm rolling with. But yeah, that did happen. I don't remember if it got much better, like off the field type situation.
Well, everybody's different personalities too, right? I mean, you come from different cultures, you come from different personalities.
Right.
But you said Osborne was getting upset because people weren't – you want people to –
Yeah,
to
I mean, Stye touched on that, although I think Stye came from an interesting background. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went to Lincoln East.
The whitest city in the world.
So I went to the whitest – I went to the whitest high school in the whitest city in the, like, third whitest state in the country.
Yeah.
And so when I guess for me – I don't think it was a huge deal in my mind because I just didn't know any different. And so I go down to Lincoln and one of the things that was kind of interesting to me, because I still think about this freaking 30, 35 years later, is the first team meeting I ever attended at Nebraska. So if you were in town during the summer going into your freshman year, I was like, well, shit, I'm already here. Crap, I'll go ahead and take a summer school class and I'm just going to work. I got a dorm room on campus, got a job working in the dorms. My dad was director of housing, so that kind of helped a little bit. But so I got a dorm room. So I lived on campus all summer. Wiegert had moved down to Lincoln with his older brother. So Zach and I are working out together all summer long. I'm living in the dorms, going to the stadium and working out with the football team doing the summer conditioning program. First team meeting I ever attended was the opening team meeting for summer conditioning. And I remember it was a big meeting in the weight room. Boyd, Randy Goble, John Jost, those guys were running the meeting. And you walk in, and on one side of the weight room was all the white guys and Will Shields. And on the other side of the weight room was all the black guys and Steve Carmer. Steve, defensive back. So. Yeah. And it was just, I remember walking in and looking around and just going, the hell? I don't know. In my mind, it stuck out.
You're probably right.
I was just looking and going like, how come there's this and there's like this middle of the weight room. There's like this space in between the two, and Boyd and Randy and all the coaches were in that space. And I just remember thinking like, God, we should maybe mix this up a little bit more. But I remember it stuck in my mind. I mean, I'll always have this very vivid memory of that first meeting and seeing that.
But the crazy thing is, if you talk to really 93, 94, 95 and on, especially those really good teams, you talked about how close good of a team you guys were. That's what the crazy thing is. You hear that and it doesn't jive with.
I think it got better in the time that I was there. And I think that was maybe the first time that you saw sort of a dedicated effort within the team that it was going to be one of these. Like, we got to have a little bit more mix here. Now, I mean, and there were guys, I mean, one of the things that, I know it stuck out, because we had Brendan in here last week, and Stye talked about it, and it was interesting to me because the setting he grew up in California, the high school he went to was...
All Mexican, he said.
Yeah, he said it was predominantly Mexican kids. You had a few African-American kids, and then you had like four white dudes. And so Stye was always the environment he grew up in. When we got together with him on weekends, he was always like, God, we need to go find a house party. Let's go have some fun. Let's go dance. Because that's all he knew coming out of California. And that was just the world he grew up in. It was not white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't really have any huge memories of it.
No, the only thing I really remember, to be completely honest with you, is when there was a whole Brooke versus Tommy starting in that game. You know, I think that was the only time, in my opinion, where it seemed like there might have been a little bit of polarization.
There was a division there.
Yeah, I think. That was probably the only time. But other than that, I don't think that the racial part of it was ever big enough to disturb us trying to get to the victory, trying to get to the goal, and the whole vision, like that type of thing. That's probably the only time where we're just like, okay, this is a little bit uncomfortable. But other than that, that's all I really remember.
And did it become uncomfortable? I mean, to give Brooke his fair due, he performed.
He earned it.
Yeah.
He earned it, right? He earned it. And so, again, for me, I played quarterback, and so I kind of understood why you'd want either one of them there. And I'm like, listen, I don't really care. I just want to win. Just put the person in you think is going to win, type of situation. But I think there's some others that were just like, oh, this is unfair. He white person do this, a black person, all that type of stuff. But I tried, in my opinion, not to either listen to that or try to defuse the situation. Like, listen, let's not implode from inside, right? Like, we've got this far. Let's not let something like this derail us from, doing what we're supposed to do.
Changing the subject now, but because it just popped into my head, and I chase squirrels. So just Rob will
butterflies.
Talk. Chase squirrels.
Well, I do the same thing.
Rob will talk forever, but it just popped in my head, the 94 team, because Brooke was hurt, Tommy's hurt, Matt Turman's your starting quarterback. Did they ever come to you and say,
yes,
it's time to be quarterback again?
Yes. Yes,
hey, you were taking some snaps that time.
I did take a few snaps, and I'll be honest, I wasn't – I'm not proud necessarily of this moment, because when he asked me, I was starting, so he's like, okay,
what do you want? Hold on.
Give me that one in the
what
back.
What is going on
the
here?
The same thing. Because Rob's a drunk.
Because salted caramel was now we need some raspberry beer. And that's what we're
looking at. Well, now I'm going with the Belgian red, actually. So.
Sorry, pick up where you were. We chase squirrels around here. Just you have to bear with us.
Yeah.
What
are we just talking about?
In 94, I got to be honest with you. At the time, the thing that was surprising to me was, and granted, at that point, you're a couple years removed from playing quarterback. You've been this really, really good safety. That was the thing that was a little surprising to me, is that they didn't go all in with you on quarterback at the time.
What I think probably what happened is after they saw me take a couple snaps, they was like, yeah, he ain't got it no more. I don't know if that was it or not. But when it's all said and done, they made the right decision. Right. Turman had been there.
The ball to Lawrence.
Got us through about two to three weeks.
Do what you know best. And let's be honest, I didn't have the greatest, injury history. Who knows? I play that game and I get hurt. Now you lose a potential quarterback and safety. You know what I mean? So I think everything worked out the way it was supposed to.
That was a little 94. That was a little bit of a thin position, because you look at.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Minner had gone down early in that year. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And you never got hurt as a defensive player, did you?
I don't remember. Not badly there, no.
Okay.
No.
So then you, after Nebraska, you get drafted. Yep. You go to the Broncos. You win a
First, wasn't it?
Packers. I only had one, buddy.
Did you get drafted by Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm remembering incorrectly there.
Won a Super Bowl. Yeah.
Blows to the head.
You're not wearing the ring. Do you still have the ring?
That's what I'm talking about. Of course, that's
Do you put it in the bank? Do you have it? Where do you have it?
Well, Stye's stuff gets stolen all the time. So
yeah, did you hear that?
Really? No.
Yeah, Stye's AFC title game ring got stolen.
Wow.
During a move from Kansas City to Jacksonville, a maid took it.
Oh, wow.
And then, how they found it? 9 years later, Cash for Gold called him.
Oh, wow. See, that's what happens when you have help, all right? You do stuff yourself, all right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Somebody...
I still have my rings, all my rings. It was a great, great time. Again, never thought I'd have the opportunity to go there, and then that 4 year stretch to be able to play two national championships, the next year get drafted, and then the next year win a freaking Super Bowl. It's like. Again, I couldn't have written that script,
What's the euphoric feeling difference between a Super Bowl and a national title?
Oh, honestly, in my opinion, it wasn't that much of a difference from a feeling standpoint, other than the Nebraska stuff meant more.
Really?
Yeah, a lot more. Because you think about it, like, I'm just going to Denver. I've been there 2 years. You know, I'm in the rotation, but not getting a lot of playing time. Like, I don't know these guys all that well. Nebraska, this is family. Like, we all grew up together. Like, we started at the bottom of the mountain and climbed this thing together to accomplish it for somebody we all feel is a father figure. Like, that was it. Like, that was my Mount Rushmore for me. The Super Bowl was great. Don't get me wrong, because, you know, it's this industry where it's the top of where you want to be, right? But when you don't do it with people that you have like a really, really strong bond with, that kind of takes a little bit away from it. And so that's what makes Nebraska stuff so
special. There's a business side to it that I always felt kind of took away from it a little bit.
Right. Right. You just don't.
Now, granted, I say that I went to one playoff game in my career,
but
that's
the thing. But think about that. That's the thing. I mean, you don't form as much of a bond with some of those guys in the NFL because, like, number one, someone feel like you're trying to take their job. Number two, those guys aren't there very long. You know what I'm saying? So number three, you're worried about if you're going to be gone after the next game. You know, so there's always that side of it to where, you know, you don't really have to worry about that in college.
Let's go back to high school because you went to Benson. And people are probably thinking now, they're listening to this, because we get a lot of young people listening to this, go, Benson? Mm-hmm. Holy crap, that's like the worst football program in the state.
Yeah.
Does that break your heart? Yeah. And what can be done to fix Northwest, Bryan, South, Benson, to make them competitive again? You're rubbing your eyes. You're rubbing your eyes, man.
I hate that question.
It's a loaded question.
I hate that question. Obviously, it hurts my heart a great deal. I hate to see, like, our program has never been, you know, at a high level. I mean, even to be honest, it's never been at an average level other than, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years that I can remember over the last 30 years.
With you know and I mean? Then with my your brother Tori. Yeah,
right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we had a few good years in those years, but it's always been down. So
was Woolridge a Benson guy?
He was. Yeah.
Did he play football?
No, only basketball.
Basketball.
Straight basketball. Straight basketball. Thanks for getting me off my train of thought.
But when I was in high school, like, we're looking up at Omaha and going, like, God, this guy from Bryan, this guy from Benson. Yeah, there's a
Andre, one of the greatest Hawkeyes of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you got Damon coming out of Northwest.
We have some ballers. But that's the other side of it, though, right? Now you've got a high concentration of those really, really good players in maybe one or two, three schools in the city. And, like, how do you fix it? Travis, I don't know because I think there's two sides of it, right? You have open enrollment, so now you can kind of do this bandwagon thing if you want to, right? I want to go to the school that's automatically winning. There's that side of it, and you can't fault a kid or a parent for wanting that. I mean, that's it just kind of is what it is. The other side is that these schools are all magnets now. Right, so they have a particular focus. And if I'm in that neighborhood and my kid has to go to this school, but it's a particular focus, then that's unfair to him, right? So I don't know how you solve that problem, but I think, in my opinion, like, you do need to limit the amount of schools that you can go to, because I think we've created an unfair advantage with some of these other places just because they're winning. And you'll hear a lot of people say, well, they're transferring to go to a different school for this different magnet. BS. You know, most of these kids are transferring because they want to participate in the sports side, you know, and so that's hurting a lot of these schools out there. How you change it, I don't know, but I'm hoping, you know, somebody else out there has some ideas and be able to do that, because I feel for the Bensons and the Northwest and the Bryans, and because I don't think, honestly, I'm not sure they'll ever come back.
I mean, and I've always said this. I mean, maybe Benson should go with North. I know that's hard to say because, I mean, that's a rivalry. Look at, I mean, Lonnie Tapp, your head coach.
Yeah.
He's at North now.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's true.
Does it come down to coaches? Because North wasn't great. Larry Martin comes in, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they're winning, right? Yeah,
That is true. And if you can get the kids and you've got good coaches, you might as well take advantage of them. And I know that they were doing that, I think, with baseball, if I'm not mistaken, like, Benson and North were kind of doing the same thing. So maybe there's an opportunity to do that and be more competitive. Like, I don't know. I would just love to see, and not just Benson, the other schools of law. I don't want anybody to be on the bottom all the time and just stay that way.
It's not healthy.
It's not. There's got to be a better way to, you know, build the school image and get more happening around.
Well, you mentioned school image because nothing builds a school image better than athletics.
Right. Number one. It's like the number one aggregator around here. It just is. You get a good football program, a good basketball program, everything else elevates, you know, and we just haven't had that. In
which I feel bad because, I mean, we, again, my kids went to Westside, played Benson for a handful of years there. I think they were a district opponent. Benson's football field, it's one of the best places to play a high school football nice game football in the
city. It's literally, it's a nice what, four field. Blocks away from where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, the two best, in my opinion, got, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this on the podcast, my two favorite high school football stadiums in Omaha, Benson and Central.
Yeah.
Those are my two favorites.
And Central didn't have one when you were playing.
Yeah. They got a great location.
Right.
Benson's outstanding. Just redid the track a few years ago. I mean, it's a great place.
Benson also has a health center that's actually going up within the school right now. Just a little plug for Benson,
and I bring that up because you're working with Steve Warren, and you were at Damon Benning's birthday party last night.
Right.
I mean, both those guys gave it a shot at Northwest, and they probably were like, "Well, this is tougher."
It's deeper than you think it is. Like, because I was with Steve for a couple of those years, you know, and it's a situation where you don't have the resources. Like, you have the kids, but the kids don't have adequate support, to be honest with you, at the school or even at the home level. You know, we'd have some of these games, and, you know, if you've got, you know, 60, 70 kids on the team, you would expect some parents to be in the stands to support some of those kids. Didn't happen much. Now, I know they grew a little bit, but that support waned as well. So, I mean, you just create kind of a hopeless situation where, you know, kids don't, you know, necessarily see the value in fighting to become a, you know, a really good athlete or being a good student. And, like, what's the hope in that? Like, what do I see long term? What's the future in that? You know, and so with me and Steve, like, one of the biggest successes that we had there was kind of changing the culture a little bit and having these kids be able to look at more. Like, we had probably, in those 2 years that we were there, we probably had more scholarships given to kids than, you know, probably the 5 years prior, you know. So for us, like, that's the testament of success. Like, we had a couple wins, a couple more wins, which was cool, but we just want these kids to look beyond kind of where they are.
He had cool unis, too. He did a good job. He did a hell of a job.
He got a little swag. He does his thing.
You played for Lonnie Tapp at Benson. And if people don't know the history of Lonnie Tapp, a hell of a high school coach, great guy. His daughter was hit by a bullet, an errant bullet. You were shot in 2011.
I was.
Take me through that. Because were you in Benson when that happened?
I was in Benson. I was in the Benson parking lot.
What the hell was going on?
I'm still trying to figure it out today, Travis. Like, for real.
Where'd you get hit?
I got hit in my shoulder, in my left shoulder.
Because you were just sitting in your car. Were you like, what the hell just happened to me? Or what?
Yeah, no, it was crazy. I'm in the parking lot, and I was just finished eating something. So the corner of the parking lot is a trash can. I drive over there, take my food, the trash out, put it in there. And as soon as I get back in my truck and I slam the door, the window explodes, and then I feel something in my shoulder, and I'm not sure what the heck is going on. All I know is when the window explodes, I'm like I think the car's about to blow up or something like that. I'm not really knowing what's going on. Like, this stuff is happening like super fast. So, but I feel something, and it's sharp, and it hurts. And I look down, and I looked over this way, and I looked this way. The glass is everywhere, and I finally look up, and when I look up, out in the street, there's a car. The guy in his window pointing a gun, firing. You know, now I'm hearing the boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, you know, this is not. So I look up and I'm just like, for instance there, I'm like, is this really happening to me? Like, how? Because I'm not involved in that type of world. Like, I don't do anything that would make someone want to retaliate against me. I stay away from those areas. So, but when I finally realized, okay, something comes to him, like, dude, you might want to move. Do something, you know? And so then I, you know, I kind of dug down and
started my car. Was he still firing at you?
Oh, yeah. He fired off. When it was all said and done, when I got my truck back, there was 10 bullet holes in it.
Shit.
Yeah.
So was it a gang initiation thing where it was just random?
I don't know.
Holy
to this day. To this day, I don't know. I talked to like one or two police officers, and at that particular time, I don't feel like they were really trying to get information on who shot me. I think they were trying to get information on, you know, other stuff that was happening in my family, because I had, unfortunately, some family members that were, you know, on the wrong side of the law, you know. And so I stopped talking to them, and I never heard anything back about anything, ever.
Ever?
Ever.
So that you don't even know who shot you?
I have no idea.
No shit.
I have no idea. Yeah, but I was able to drive off, and I wasn't, because it happened so fast, I didn't really have time to really get scared. I just, you know, got to react. So, but then as I'm driving off, they shot out one of my tires. So now I'm like, okay, they take off this way, I take off the other way, and I realize I'm driving on the flat. I'm like, okay, now I'm really scared, because if they come back, I can't outrun them. You know, this is kind of a bad thing. But luckily, they kept going, and as I'm driving home, I'm able to call 911 and be like, listen, I need you to meet me at my place, and they come and get me and everything. Turns out to be okay. But yeah, it was just a really, really crazy scenario that to this day, I still don't understand why it happened. I think it was just a case of mistaken identity. That's what I think it was. But in essence, my takeaway from it was, because to be honest with you, after that happened, I was about to be done with North Omaha. I was about to say, look, I'm, you know, wash my hands, I'm gonna move out of here. Like, I felt like I'd set a good enough example, been really good in the community and that type of thing. Why would someone like this happen to me? But when it all came down to it, like, that wasn't me. And that wasn't the way to handle that situation. And I saw that the person who actually shot me was not Caucasian, was a young male. And I'm like, well, I got to be able to fight that somehow, you know. And so after that, it probably took a couple months or so. But once I got back healthy and that type of thing, after that, I decided to start mentoring. And so that's really what got me into our teammates.
Oh, so you're into teammates.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, and I've been doing that. Well, I got shot in 2011. That's when I started.
Wow. So do you have closure or do you not have closure?
I have closure. Like, I don't necessarily need to know who it is. I'm hoping that whoever that person is, if he didn't get caught, then he's realizing that he's lucky as hell that number one, I didn't die. Number two, he didn't get caught, and I can kind of live on and realize the mistake that he made, and use that as a second chance to do better. You know, the other side of it is, it gives me a chance to, again, mentor one kid at a time and try to create this ripple effect where people are doing positive things.
So with Warren Academy and teammates, do you feel, I mean, did you, that was a calling then to start mentoring at that point?
For me, yeah. Yeah. Because I was always doing stuff with youth, but at that particular time, especially in my community, like I grew up literally 8-9 blocks from there, you know, so it's like, how can I really fight this particular problem, you know, kind of head on? And for me, that's how I was going to be able to do it.
That's cool. Because you guys were both at a teammates event recently, right?
Yeah.
I never did make it that night. That was state wrestling.
Oh.
I missed it.
But you came later, though, right?
I did. I met up.
You came later. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
See, well, you showed up. Showed up. So you're at the AIM Institute now.
Correct.
What do you do at the AIM Institute? And are you able to help kids there?
So I'm director of business development there. And AIM is a nonprofit that's trying to grow a stronger, more diverse tech community. So in essence, if you look at the job market, there are a number of companies that need people with tech skills. They're not finding them. And so it is our charge to try to create a pipeline for that. And even more than that, try to get a lot more color in this area as well. So we have a number of programs within the schools. We're in, I want to say, 16 schools between North Omaha, South Omaha, and Council Bluffs, where we're just exposing kids to tech, you know, from third grade all the way up through high school. And the idea is, if you, you know, expose them, you let them have fun, you let them understand the career opportunities that are actually there, that long term, they'll actually pick that as a career. And if they do that, then that helps a lot of our, you know, our businesses. The flip side of that is, we're trying to remove this limiting ceiling that a lot of people have. Like, I grew up here in Vincent, didn't know anything about engineering, didn't have any engineers around me, my family, or anything like that. You know, and the only reason I got exposed to it was because of a school program. Well, we're trying to do some of that for some of these other kids as well. Don't think that just because you don't see it in your neighborhood or you don't see it in your family, that you can't be that particular position, whether it's an engineer, whether it's a doctor, whether it's any of those type of things, right? The other part of it is, it's tech. Tech is huge now, right? You go through COVID, the only way we can do business is because of tech, right? Everybody's locked in their house. Well, if you don't have the web and kind of all that, those techno stuff, business stops, right? So it brings this huge attention and emphasis on tech. And now we've got you know, a chance to kind of talk about, like, this is why tech is important. This is why we need more people, you know, those types of things. So we're able to share that message and kind of meet kids where they're at, because let's be honest, all kids have a video game, cell phone, social media, kind of all that type of stuff, right? But how can we get them to stop using it as just a consumer and kind of create a career path for themselves, you know? So we do a lot of that, and we do that also with adults as well, you know? So it's all about showing people that there is access, there's opportunity, there are resources for you guys to be successful long term.
That's how Tony and I reconnected, is that the AIM Institute was out at MCL Construction.
Yep.
And it's a nice office.
Yeah, it's a great office.
Yeah. And I'm like,
Trev does work in a palace.
Yeah, I do have a real job. It's just, I don't sit in the basement all the time drinking beer with you.
Right.
That won't pay all the bills. Won't pay all the bills.
So it'll pay some, but
we're working on it.
And your daughter played. So you got a son in Illinois, and your daughter played professional soccer.
Daughter played professional soccer. She Illinois grad. Played 3 years overseas, 5 different places. What the heck? She was at Japan, Lithuania, Sweden, Iceland. And what is the other one? I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on the other one.
She's worldly.
I mean, she's been around. Worldly. Yeah, you know, she's been around, which is really cool. Man, I don't think she ever knew that, you know, she'd have that opportunity to, but to be able to have that experience is awesome. And now she's back, and she doesn't want to necessarily be overseas anymore, but she still wants to play. So she's trying to find opportunities here, which is a little bit tougher because it's a lot more competitive. So while she's trying to figure that out, she's also trying to do a little bit of modeling and trying to figure out what this whole being a grown-up thing is about. So, but she's doing well, though.
Good. And I know you got to get to 7-on-7 practice so I got to let you go here soon. But you're 50 years old, so you're right around our age.
Yeah.
Damn, you look good. Look how good a shape he's in. What do you do, man? What do you do?
Coaches. Well, I found the fountain of youth, and I'm not telling any of you guys.
Mentality health.
He's running around.
He's going to mentality.
You know what he's doing? He's out there running around and coaching a bunch of middle school and high school kids all day.
That is true. Hey, you know, these kids, they get a little bigger, they get a little mouthy. You got to show them, like, hey, I can still take you, youngster.
Still do it.
That's awesome. Tony, thanks for coming in today, man. We really appreciate it. It's was it different than you thought it was going to be?
This was fun, man. Yeah, you guys are polished. You got this machine rolling, man. I love it. This is a lot of gun. I appreciate you guys having me.
I was going to say, it's all Travis in reality.
It's all Owen.
It's all Owen.
He's like Oz behind the curtain.
Owen's the man.
Yeah, he just sits there. And he's running all the controls back there. So, make sure to go to BetFredSports.com to find out if Betfred Sports is legal in the state that you are in, and download their app and make all your sports bets at BetFredSports.com. Big thanks to Husker Hounds, 2 locations in the Omaha area. You can also shop at HuskerHounds.com. Go to, if you need a lawyer, Connor Orr is the guy to call. We're going to have Connor in pretty soon to talk NIL, because this NIL thing's just getting out of hand. I'm sure Tony sees it a lot, just with the kids that he's coaching and getting recruited, that the money flowed around and what's going to happen. And we haven't even talked about the college football playoff stuff. And maybe we just need to do one on that.
Good. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I love our guests. We got to do just like a...
Travis and Rob pontificating.
Well, a catch-up one. We got to catch up on everything going on in the world of college football.
Also, Steve Swanstrom, the CEO and president of Central Federal Credit Union, has given us the New Glarus, by the way, which is really
good. We've been killing a little New Glarus the last couple of podcasts.
Jason has got a bunch of beer waiting for us here at his dad's place.
He does. I got to go pick it up.
Yeah. So
I'm on it. I'm on it.
All right. For Tony Veland, for Dr. Rob Zadiska, for Owen Justice, I'm Travis Justice. We will talk to you next time on the Doc Talk podcast presented by Betfred Sports.